Hello, this is Chris with the Bloomington Pentagraph for Monday, June 9th. We'll begin today's reading on the front page, Letting Chicken Farmers Take Wing. Chicken Bill would boost small poultry farms, ease restrictions on products from Springfield. A bill that would lift long-standing restrictions on small poultry farmers in Illinois, reducing red tape and transforming the way local farmers process and sell their products, is heading to the governor. Under a measure dubbed the Chicken Bill, farmers who process fewer than 7,500 birds annually would be exempt from state and federal inspections of their poultry operations or from having to send birds to USDA-approved processing facilities, an increase from the previous 5,000 bird threshold. The change, part of an update to the Illinois Meat and Poultry Inspection Act, also allows these farmers to sell their poultry beyond their own farms, including at farmers' markets, roadside stands, and through delivery, a major shift from earlier restrictions. This is important for our small farmers to be able to get their product to the community, and that's what this is all about, said Senator Sally Turner, who co-sponsored the bill. The Illinois House voted 116 to 0 on Friday, May 30th, to approve House Bill 2196, and the Senate passed it unanimously on May 22nd. Turner represents a largely rural district spanning 10 counties. Farmers in my community, especially small farmers, are important to me personally, but also to our whole district, she said. State Representative Charlie Meyer, a farmer himself, said the legislation provides local agriculture with a much-needed boost. We always want to get the freshest product to the customer. We want them to know where it came from. So that's better than meeting the farmer who's raised his chickens knowing where they're coming from. They're fresh, and you're getting a good, healthy product. Initially, the bill faced pushback from some public health groups, which argued for stricter labeling and packaging rules to ensure the safety of poultry products for consumption. The revised bill includes mandated temperature controls during storage, transportation, shipping, and delivery. Processed poultry must be packaged in sealed, leak-proof containers to prevent contamination. Each package must also be clearly labeled, with the farm's name and address, the product name, net weight, and a statement indicating that the poultry was processed under exemption and not inspected by state or federal authorities. Everything you see in that bill was done by some of the Public Health Coalition, said Michael Desmond, interim director of public health for DuPage County. I think our voices were heard and they understood our concerns. Ed Dubrick, a poultry farmer and policy organizer with the Illinois Stewardship Alliance, a nonprofit organization that advocates for sustainable agriculture, said he went around the state and asked livestock farmers what they needed to help with the processing of their animals. Dubrick said the current exemption was too limiting because farmers could only sell on or from the farm. Expecting someone to come to the farm every time they want some chicken just really isn't realistic. But if we can bring it to the farmers market where the consumers are, that adds an opportunity. Illinois is one of the few states without more flexible on-farm poultry processing exemptions. In many states, about 40, you're allowed to process up to 20,000 birds under similar rules. We're only asking for 7,500. Farmers will benefit, according to Dubrick. It gives them the opportunity to drive both their production and their profits on their farms. For consumers, he said, I think you'll see an increase in the availability of local poultry, and I don't think you'll see any difference in food quality or safety. Farmers are proud of their product. They're not going to put their name, their reputation, their business on the line. Anna Morrell, co-owner of The Little Farm at Weldon Springs in Clinton, said the bill could make it more viable for her and her husband to scale up their small operation, which began in 2020. This basically just opens up another avenue for getting poultry processed with lower overhead and gives us an avenue of sales into farmers markets. We're currently not operating under the poultry exemption. We take our meat to USDA inspected facilities, but there are very few processors in Illinois that process poultry. Morrell said the current law has made it more challenging for poultry farmers in Illinois to sell their products. This bill would decrease the number of miles farmers have to travel to get their poultry processed. If signed, legislators and advocates say the bill represents a rare collaboration between producers, public health departments, and state lawmakers. And let's see if we can't keep a few more farm families on the farm and give kids another chance at a future on the farm. Also from Springfield, future uncertain for transit reform. Legislators discuss next steps as agencies look to set budgets. Minutes before the clock hit midnight and the calendar flipped to June 1st, the Illinois Senate advanced a much-watched legislative proposal to reform and fund public transportation in the Chicago area and prevent dire cuts to service. But Chicago Democrat Senator Rahm Wilhelm's Hail Mary attempt to avoid cuts was downed short of the end zone as opposition mounted to the bill's revenue plan, particularly its creation of a $1.50 package delivery fee in the state. The House declined to take up the transit funding bill, as the stroke of midnight meant the chamber required a three-fifths majority vote to advance any legislation that would take effect before June 2026. Chicago's public transit agencies are now entering an uncertain future. Public hearings on service cuts could begin this summer, but lawmakers say they are dedicated to finding solutions. The funding doesn't run out until December 31st of this year, House Speaker Chris Welch told Capital News Illinois for the latest episode of the Illinois Lawmakers Program. We have time, so I think it's important to take our time and get it right. The transit agencies will each run out of pandemic relief funding at various points in 2026, creating deficits in their budgets if lawmakers don't find new funding sources. Meanwhile, Senate President Don Harmon acknowledged he had reservations about the proposal's revenue-generating measures, which include the delivery fee as well as a statewide tax on electric vehicle charging and the expansion of a Chicago tax on real estate transfers to the suburbs. Frankly, I don't like them all that much, Harmon said of the revenue measures in an interview on CNI. I wish there were better alternatives, but if you don't like them, come and tell us how you'd pay for it, because this is going to be expensive, and most of the stakeholders seem to be worried about protecting or expanding their own power and having somebody else pay for it. While there's technically time before the funds run out, transit agencies say they're planning next year's budgets now. Regional Transportation Authority spokesperson Tina Fassett-Smith said in a statement Sunday that agencies will move forward on evaluating their budgets based only on funding that the systems are confident they will receive in 2026. Right now, those budgets collectively contain a $771 million shortfall as pandemic relief funds expire. Both the RTA and Chicago Transit Authority have meetings scheduled next week, where talks will presumably focus on how the agencies will maintain a balanced budget in 2026. The RTA previously projected that if lawmakers fail to deliver funding, it would lead to thousands of layoffs and a 40% service cuts. Civic Federation President Joe Ferguson told CNI the end of October appears to be a clearer deadline for legislative action because the agencies finalize budgets in November. This is a sooner than later exercise because the closer we get to the next budget cycles of the service boards themselves, the more that this gets driven by doom and gloom scenarios, which are correct scenarios, but they're going to be an effort to drive the revenue imperatives without the reform imperatives. The agencies are federally required to have public hearings before enacting service cuts. Both legislative chambers introduced separate plans late in the final week of May, which, although similar in many ways, contained key differences showing lawmakers are still apart on a deal. The differences only became more magnified as labor organizations and suburban communities opposed a series of taxes designed to plug the funding shortfall. That new funding proposal surfaced in the Senate on Saturday afternoon, hours before the legislature was scheduled to adjourn. The plan did away with proposed toll increases and a diversion of sales tax revenue away from Collar County governments. Instead, it proposed a new statewide tax on deliveries and kept a statewide tax on EV charging, as well as suburban taxes on real estate transfers and ride shares. Lawmakers negotiating the bill had vowed no funding without reforms, a pledge they remain committed to, Velaman told CNI, noting they should be tackled at the same time. The two chambers are generally in agreement on transit reform, which includes giving new decision-making authority to the RTA to set fares and schedules and renaming the agency to Northern Illinois Transit Authority. But when the adjournment deadline came, the House wasn't prepared to take up a bill addressing funding, even after months of negotiations, Representative Eva Dina Delgado, who is leading transit reform for House Democrats, told CNI, "We spent hours and hours in negotiation, so our reform bills were very similar," she said. "What we didn't spend hours and hours talking about was the revenue." Velaman said the tax increases and other revenue solutions in his plan would raise $1.5 billion, enough to plug the budget hole and fund transit at a level that the RTA says would significantly improve public transportation. But House Democrats didn't have time to review the funding options. "Based on my conversations with members, they needed to know more," Delgado said. "They needed to understand more, and that is now my job to make sure that whatever revenue plan we come up with, it's communicated and people understand what it is." Despite facing an uncertain future in the House, Velaman said the Senate voted on the bill because "we believe in responsible governance, and we believe in avoiding 40% cuts to service and more than 3,000 workers getting layoff notices." With November being the next pressing deadline for action, lawmakers could return to Springfield for a special session this summer or wait until the annual fall veto session to act on transit reform. Whenever the General Assembly reconvenes, they will need broader agreement, as the three-fifths vote requirement remains in effect through the calendar year. While the House could still send Velaman's bill to the governor's desk, it passed the Senate on a 32-22 vote, short of three-fifths of the chamber. Several Democrats voted against the plan, foreshadowing the headwinds in the House. Governor Pritzker hasn't expressed an opinion on the proposed taxes. He told reporters on Sunday he learned about the taxes at the same time Velaman unveiled them to the public. "We were not the leaders of that endeavor, but we were at the table, listening and helping whenever we were asked to," Pritzker said. "And again, I think there's significant work that will need to be done over the summer and into the fall to make sure that it gets across." The tax increases were non-starters for Republicans, who haven't proposed their own funding plan, and Democrats don't need their votes to reach a three-fifths majority. "We need to look at things holistically and restructure rather than continuously adding more taxes to pay the bills," Senate Minority Leader John Curran told CNI that lawmakers should not be depending so much on new taxes. "We would put out a much more constrained proposal. There'd be little more skin in the game on efficiencies and fares, and then we would be coming to taxpayers last in that. And quite frankly, we'd be taking a more regional approach on that and not a statewide approach." And in U.S. politics, time and voters will decide Medicaid fight from Washington. Republicans have yet to enact Trump's tax cut and spending bill, but both parties are confident about its impact on an election more than a year away. Ultimately, time and voters will decide whether the legislation, which includes changes to Medicaid, is politically popular or would jeopardize GOP control of Capitol Hill. The wide-ranging measure is chock-full of items for Democrats and Republicans to argue over, but there was also a rare moment of bipartisanship. Democrats, including House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, billionaire Elon Musk, the Congressional Budget Office, and GOP Senators Ron Johnson of Wisconsin and Rand Paul of Kentucky, all agree that the bill would add to the federal deficit. According to the CBO, it would cut taxes by $3.7 million and add $2.4 trillion to deficits over the next 10 years. Of course, the White House and other Republicans are vocal in their opposition to that report, asserting that the CBO is not properly accounting for the economic growth the bill would spur. They are historically totally unreliable, Speaker Mike Johnson said in a recent interview on Fox News. That's a different tune than 4 years ago when Johnson used CBO projections to question the effectiveness of the Democratic-led infrastructure bill. Now that the CBO has confirmed this bill adds nearly $4 billion to the deficit, contrary to the White House's claim that the bill is paid for, let's see if the moderate Democrats keep their promise to only vote for a bill consistent with White House estimates, Johnson posted on social media on November 18, 2021. A couple of weeks earlier, he referred to the objective CBO score of the total cost of that bill. While voters have expressed general concerns about the national debt and deficit, the change of heart on the CBO from some Republicans is unlikely to be the biggest issue of the 2026 midterm elections. Base Republican voters, including fiscal conservatives who bemoan the bill's potential impact on the national debt, aren't going to support Democratic candidates in droves. Medicaid, however, is poised to be a key component of the 2026 midterms. Democrats have reason for optimism concerning the president for when parties have attempted to change the health care system. Democrats themselves lost 63 House seats and 6 Senate seats in 2010 in the wake of enacting the law known as the Affordable Care Act. 8 years later, Republicans lost more than 40 seats after unsuccessful attempts to repeal that law. Healthcare is likely to be a hot topic because of the scope of the impact. According to the CBO, an estimated 10.9 million people would lose health care coverage under the budget reconciliation bill by 2034, including 7.8 million from Medicaid and others from changes to ACA exchanges. Democratic campaign ads about Medicaid and benefit cuts almost write themselves. Republicans agree that people would lose coverage under the bill, but they argue the cuts would affect those who shouldn't be receiving the benefit in the first place. In GOP terms, there would be eligibility cuts to 1.4 million people who are in the country illegally and people who are physically able to work but aren't. Johnson and others have specifically targeted 29-year-old males sitting on their couches playing video games. Changing entitlement programs is generally regarded as electoral suicide, but Republicans are still operating with the confidence of the 2024 elections that saw them win the House, flip the Senate, and hold the House, the White House. Broadly, the GOP believes voters gave them a mandate to root out waste, fraud, and abuse, and removing certain populations from the Medicaid system falls under that mantra in order to strengthen the program for the rest of the beneficiaries. The potential risk is in the implementation. Using immigration as an example, the Trump administration has at times been inconsistent in enforcing its policies, leading to confusion and negative stories that can influence public sentiment. Trump's overall job approval rating and his specific approval rating on immigration has declined since he took office. on Medicaid, it's not hard to see people losing coverage over confusion about their immigration status or over the definition of being physically able to work. Overall, Republicans risk misinterpreting the 2024 results, which included Trump winning 49% of the popular vote and the party winning 50% of House seats and 53% of the Senate, as a blank check to pursue policy goals at all costs. The last election was more about the direction of the country, the health of the economy, and a rejection of Democrats in power, rather than a full embrace of the Republican Party. Republicans are wise to try and get their legislation passed sooner rather than later and avoid one of the mistakes Democrats made in 2010. President Obama came into office vowing to be post-partisan by letting Congress work out the details of the ACA, but he didn't get to sign the measure into law until March 23, 2010. Democratic candidates ended up trying to run away from it and wishing that Obama had done more to sell his signature piece of legislation. Republicans are now determined to send their bill to Trump's desk by early July and spend the rest of the cycle justifying and explaining it, with the president a willing partner to sell the benefits. Ultimately, though, the current argument over whether these are benefit cuts or eligibility cuts will be decided by voters after they see and experience the bill for themselves and their friends, family, and neighbors, and that will just take time. Overall, if voters feel confident in the direction of the country, then the GOP has a chance to maintain control of Congress in the 2026 elections. But if a majority of voters decides the country is on the wrong track, it would be hard to imagine Republicans escaping accountability. From the local page, scholarships boost 25 to pursue dreams. $87,000 awarded by 14 organizations, including MAPS, NAACP, Divine Nine, from Bloomington. 25 students headed off to college this coming year received dozens of scholarships from 14 local organizations at Saturday's annual joint scholarship celebration at Mount Pisgah Baptist Church. The celebration is hosted by the Mentoring and Providing Scholarships Program, a local nonprofit that mentors young people as they navigate high school into college. Partners with the Bloomington Normal NAACP, local alumni chapters of the National Pan-Hellenic Council, Divine Nine, prominent individuals, and the 100 Black Men of Central Illinois joined MAPS this year to present over $87,000 to help students pursue degrees in higher education. It just felt really rewarding, all the hard work, and knowing that my parents were here to support me and clap for me as well was really awesome, said Kendall Opsell, 18, who is heading to the University of Illinois to study animal sciences. It's just a very great, rewarding experience, she said, especially since I knew some of the other kids, too, so I got to cheer for them as well and congratulate them. Chance French, 18, will be headed to Northern Illinois University to study business administration. These scholarships from the Divine Nine will help him pursue my dream. This is the purpose of the MAPS program, said co-founder Carla Campbell Jackson. Anytime we're able to distribute such a wide array of funds is significant, and we're letting the students know that we believe in them and that we're confident in what they'll be able to do in life. Bradley Ross Jackson, a student at Morehouse College in Atlanta, Georgia, gave advice to the scholarship recipients on how to succeed in higher education. Jackson, who received scholarships at last year's event, told his peers, among other things, to remember to phone home, to treat college as a full-time job, make use of professors' office hours, and to stay away from distractions like drugs and alcohol. Jackson received the NAACP Youth Activists of the Year Image Award in 2023. Teresa Haley, recipient of the NAACP Activists of the Year Image Award in 2020, reminded the scholarship recipients that community helps them succeed. It took a village to raise a child, and at college, you will need another village. She advised them to visit home, to help run the house, and to volunteer their time. Practice grace and dignity. Such a large community presence left an impact on the scholarship recipients. Benika Demenica, 18, will be going to Loyola University in Chicago to study healthcare administration. The MAPS program definitely opened my eyes to how different organizations come together and can help not just high school students, but college students. And it also has given me the inspirations of one day coming back and hopefully donating. French said he was inspired to leap at every opportunity. Don't miss out on anything. If you see the application, sign up for it. You may not know what you get. Kira King, 18, is headed to San Diego University to study computer science. Though she received a full tuition scholarship from the university, she was moved by the community's willingness to rally around their young people and give back. In fact, that is the main reason she took from Saturday's event. Give back 1,000%, yes, King said afterwards. That room of people, incredible people, accomplished people, giving people. Love them so much. Goodfield State Bank to acquire Varna Branch from Goodfield. Goodfield State Bank has entered into an agreement to purchase the Hickory Point Bank branch at 510 Main Street in Varna, according to a news release. The sale is expected to be completed in the fourth quarter of 2025, pending regulatory approval. We are excited about the opportunity to expand our service area with a location in Marshall County. We believe these customers will be well served by our local bankers and growing branch network, stated Chad Martin, president and CEO of Goodfield State Bank. Hickory Point Bank is committed to a smooth transition for its Marshall County customers, and we believe Goodfield State Bank will be a great provider of banking services to the region, stated Anthony Nessler, president and CEO of Hickory Point Bank. As we position Hickory Point Bank for growth, we believe a focus on Macon, Sangamon, and Champaign counties is most appropriate for us at this time. Goodfield State Bank, founded in 1914 and incorporated in 1920, is headquartered in Goodfield with branch locations in Eureka, Metamora, Roanoke, and Washington. Hickory Point Bank, first founded in 1979, is based in Decatur and has locations in Champaign, Decatur, and Springfield. Search is on for missing Back to the Future guitar. Marty McFly grabbed a guitar in Back to the Future and rocked out with the band at a 1950s high school dance, helping him narrowly avoid blinking out of existence before time traveling back to the 1980s. The guitar in real life wasn't as lucky. Filmmakers looked for the instrument while making the movie's 1989 sequel, but even now, it's nowhere to be found. 4 decades after the blockbuster film debuted, the guitar's creator launched a search for the iconic cherry red Gibson. Gibson, which is based in Nashville, asked the public for helping tracking it down as the movie turns 40, and as the company produces a new documentary about the search and the film Lost to the Future. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Bloomington Pentagraph for Monday, June 9th. Please stay tuned.